Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back to the Rugby League Guru Podcast. We've got another instalment of our dream teams today. Today I'm joined by 2010 Premiership winner Jamie Soward. Mate, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on the pod.
Mate, it's a weird fucking time at the moment. How are you dealing with it all?
Yeah, that's probably sums it up for everyone. I'm probably going a little bit stir crazy at the moment, not being able to just go out and enjoy some of the liberties, but yeah, in saying that, I'm very lucky that my job's still going with the NRL and stuff like that. So I've been keeping busy as I can, but yeah, just feeling for all those people out there that have lost jobs and businesses and stuff like that. It's a weird time, and I think that mental health and even just walking to get a coffee, like, people are just really down at the moment. So trying to find little wins in every day and keep punching, and hopefully we get through it soon.
Mate, it is a weird time, and as you said, it's the little things that we probably have taken. I've definitely taken for granted my entire life, being able to go down to the park, take the dog for a walk whenever you want, those sorts of things. Even just, sitting at the pub and having a couple of beers with mates. Like, I give my right arm to be there at the moment.
Yeah, well, even just getting a haircut. Yeah, it's as simple as that. So, you're right. I think that, layman people, we don't understand, the messaging and whatever else is going on. So, we're really looking for outlets, and, I'm lucky that the rugby league still stuck around and we can still talk some footy. So I'm looking forward to this pod, and, it's one of those things that, podcasts are a big way of life at the moment. So sharing stories and listening to other people's stories and experiences, I think it's really important. So I'm looking forward to it.
Mate, let's dive into your dream team. And at fullback, you've gone for... I still think it's amazing when we talk about the best fullbacks of all time. I just don't think this guy is mentioned enough. Darren Lockyer, of course, he moved to 5'8 and became one of the best 5'8s we've ever seen. But for me, I know people say that Billy Slater, he revolutionised the position. I think Darren Lockyer sort of kicked off that revolution personally. Tell me about Lockie, mate.
Yeah, I had Darren. It's a very tight one. You could argue both every way. I think that, I'm a bit more of a rugby league savant, and having played against Billy, you're right, he transitioned what it meant to be a fullback and what fullbacks did, throughout the game. I mean, game planning against him at fullback was an absolute nightmare. So, but I went with Lockie. I found, like, he's had time with the ball, and he really, paved the way for a guy like Billy Slater, catching the ball on the full. And I'm probably a little bit biased in the fact that he was bringing in the drop punt, into the corner, and I sort of put that into my game as well. So, I was a little bit probably swayed that way with the way that Lockie played in the in the early 2000s and how good he was, and then the transition to 5'8". I couldn't have him at 5'8", so I decided to get him in the number one jersey.
Let me ask you this, Jamie, mate. If Lockie played out his entire career at fullback, do you think it'd be so cut and dry for people saying Slater's the best fullback they've seen?
I don't know, because Lockie, obviously, he didn't have the pace of Billy, and Billy, you know, was also surrounded by the greatest of all time and in Cameron Smith and then Cooper Cronk as well, whereas Lockie sort of, even though he had Alf and Kevy later on, you know, he probably didn't have the amount of help that he would have had at fullback in the 7 and 6 role. So I'm not sure about that, but he was certainly, yeah, I think people forget how good Darren Lockie was at fullback before he transitioned into one of the best 5'8s. And like I said, I couldn't have him at 5'8", so, and I wanted him in the side, so I pushed the button on the fullback.
Mate, let's move to your wingers. And the first guy you selected, obviously recently retired, heartbreaking stuff this year, a former teammate of yourself at the Dragons, Brett Morris. I don't think there's ever been a more reliable and a more consistent winger in the entirety of our game. Tell me about B-Moz.
Yeah, B-Moz just one of my favourite guys to play with, obviously, and but watch as well. I think that, you know, the way that he put himself in the right position to be able to make the play time after time, that consistency that he got. I mean, you think about, he started 2009 in reserve grade at the Dragons. We had Wendell Saylor and Jason Nightingale, and then he comes in and scores 45 tries, I think, in 2 years after missing the first couple of games. So, I just loved playing with B-Moz. I thought his finishing ability, the way that he turned half chances into tries and could have that electrifying speed, I just couldn't have anyone else on the wing. For me, that ability, put with the way that he scrambled in defence and came up with, so many defensive plays, especially at the back end of his career as well, I think he will go down as the best winger ever. And, he hasn't always, the Bulldogs, it probably wasn't his best couple of seasons, but he's put himself and reinvented himself at the back end of his career, and he's one of the nice guys as well. So, I went with B-Moz.
I think, mate, without a doubt, 2010, he was on fire that year with you guys, a guy that you could tell me he was the best winger in the game then. And then we fast forward 10 years later, he wins a premiership with the Roosters. And for me, Jack White, and he got the Clive Churchill medal that night. And, you can probably talk more on it, but I thought his kicking game was unbelievable. And dare I say, if he was kicking to any other winger other than Brett Morris for the Roosters, I think the Canberra Raiders would have got more points out of that edge. He was unbelievable in that game, Brett Morris. He brought the Roosters out of trouble. He went up and collected so many perfect kicks from Jack Wyden. That night really summed up for me who Brett Morris is. In an era that's dominated by wingers full of highlights and that are probably stronger, faster than Brett Morris, it's his reliability just to do a job every single time.
Totally agree. I felt like he and Daniel Supo, probably could have split the Clive Churchill medal. I know that Jack, played fantastic in a really good game, but if you go back and watch how many times Brett, came up and made the play and got the Roosters out of trouble in one of those games that it was going to come down to one or two plays, that Brett and Daniel kept turning them away. So, I totally agree.
Mate, your other winger, you chose Greg Inglis here, obviously a guy that at one point in his career, he was the best fullback in the game. At another point in his career, he was the best centre in the game. At another point in his career, he was the best 5'8 in the game. You've picked him on the wing. And, that all sounds a bit crazy when you just say that sentence. But when you put it in context, people completely understand this selection. You just have to have him in there somewhere, don't you?
Yeah, and having played against GI, obviously, it's a bit of a nightmare.
I won't ask you about it, don't worry.
No, people think I get embarrassed about it, and that stopped a long time ago. I think when it happened, obviously I was embarrassed because I missed a tackle and let in the try. But I'm not embarrassed at the fact that I tried to tackle GI. I'm not the first or the last person that would have that have missed him. So you talk about the talent that he had, and when he came into the rugby league world, he was electrifying fullback at North Devils, and then transformed himself into such a great utility back that could have played anywhere. And you combine that with his skill and pace and ability to finish. And like you said, he's so good at centre and fullback and 5'8". But when you're trying to pick your best team, you put them and you make the position where you can fit guys in. So, I just thought GI on the other side with Brett Morris, I've got two finishers. I've got a big body to be able to kick to in GI. I've got a person that's going to start my sets as well. So, I'm sort of probably, rather than just picking the best players, I'm more thinking if I had to play a game tomorrow and everyone was in their prime, what they would do for me in that position. And, Greg Inglis does that.
And obviously, mate, when I look at your centres, I understand the selection of GI on the wing even more. Two old school guys here. One's an immortal of our game. The other one is probably one of the most underrated players of all time. If he was made an immortal tomorrow, you wouldn't hear any arguments from me. The first guy that is an immortal, Mal Meninga, the absolute juggernaut in lime green, one of the greatest players we've ever seen. I imagine this is a guy that you would have looked up to when you were younger.
Yeah, born and raised in Canberra, yeah, up until the age of 10, and Mal was probably the biggest thing down and around there. So, yeah, his presence on the field, and, you know, well, I grew up in the old school watching the old Wingfield Cup, you know, kangaroo tours and all that kind of stuff, and just seeing the presence that Mal had on those kangaroo tours and, you know, his big body. I just think that you put him in one centre and you've got a nightmare for the whole game. And, you know, like I said, I'm picking the team as if I'm had to play it tomorrow, and you pair him with Brett Morris or GI, probably BMOS on that left wing or right wing, whatever you want, and you're able to come up with some strike power there. So Mal's such an intimidating figure on the field, and you know, he'll probably go down as the best centre I think to have played our game.
Mate, there was a documentary that dropped on KO the other day about Ricky Stewart. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but he talks about Mal Meninga at one point, and he says that as long as Mal was on his team, as long as he crossed the white line for him, Mal could play his worst game or his best game, and he was confident they'd win because he just brought that aura and that little bit extra touch to their team. An incredible footballer.
Yeah, that's right. And those guys, you know, are invaluable in your side once you have those people. And, you know, for us, it was, you know, Dean Young. You know, once he suited up, you knew that it didn't matter what was going to happen for the next 80 minutes, that he was going to find a way to help you out. So, probably me a bit closely with Bo Scott, and you can see why Ricky speaks so highly about Mal. So, yeah, like I said, an intimidating figure on the field, someone that I grew up and just couldn't believe how big he was and how mobile he was. And, you know, I think his career is probably cut short. My first grand final was the 94 grand final, and, Mal's last ever game. So I was pretty lucky to be able to see that in person.
Mate, obviously Mal, a larger-than-life figure, so strong, so fast, and I have a look at your other centre. Very different footballers, but just as talented. As I said, if this guy Brett Kenny was made an immortal tomorrow, I don't think you'd hear any arguments from me. My favourite thing about Brett Kenny is that he saved his best football for the biggest stages. Always on grand final day, he was, if not the best on the field, the second or third best on the field. An incredible player, the natural.
And, yeah, so skillful. And excuse me, so skillful and crafty, and you know, when you talk about, and we get into my halves very shortly, you know, you think about, you know, the went head to head, you know, those were the guys that dominated. And Brett Kenny, you know, I agree, he was totally underrated, and you put him out in the centres and have that bit of craftiness. I don't know if you can have two big powerful centres. I look at, you know, like the Roosters set up at the moment, Joe Manu's so crafty, and you know, it's not necessarily brute power and force that he uses. He uses other ways to be able to get himself into the game and come up with plays. And I just feel like, you know, watching Brett Kenny, you know, when I grew up and seeing some of the highlights and that, he just looked like he had so much time. And those guys are invaluable in your side. You know, you can throw them the ball and they're able to come up with plays based off their time with the ball. And, you know, Brett Kenny did that.
Jamie, I think Brett Kenny's one of those guys that you can watch as much tape on him as you want. You can study him as much as you want. You just can't emulate what he was able to do, though. You've either got what Brett Kenny had or you didn't. It's not the sort of stuff that you can spend hours in the gym or hours on the training paddock and become like Brett Kenny. He just had something special, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's probably everyone thinks that they can be an NRL player, and, you know, people work hard and work a lot on their craft to be able to get to that stage. But you do have guys that are just superior talent. You know, Brett Kenny wasn't by any means the biggest body, but I just love the way that he was able to have time with the ball. I just think that that's a real skill and art that we don't see much anymore. You know, I think about a guy like Nicho Hynes, he's probably, you know, very similar to Brett Kenny in fact that he has time when he's got the ball and he never looks stressed, and, you know, he comes up with the right decision. So, definitely Brett Kenny, was able to do that.
Mate, you spoke about Bird having time with the football, and for me, I think it is the most dangerous asset in rugby league. And you're 5'8", he definitely had more time than anyone. Wally Lewis, a champion player. You mentioned that obviously Brett Kenny was the only guy that could sort of match it with Wally Lewis in the Origin Arena, and you hear the old stories about Queensland cheering whenever Brett Kenny was named in the Stenners instead of 5'8". I mean, it really is the greatest compliment, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And, yeah, Wally, for me, was my favourite player growing up. You know, being able to see what he did in the big moments. And like I said, if you've got Mal and Brett Kenny on your side, you need someone who understands, you know, getting them the ball and not overplaying his hand, but also can come up with the big plays in the tight moments. And, you know, Wally Lewis was one of those guys that was so intimidating just by his presence. You know, you talked about Ricky Stewart and Mal, you know, think about that. Imagine looking across the circle and Wally Lewis is putting the boots on, getting ready to go into war with you. It just doesn't seem real, you know. So I just felt like he was, you know, one of those guys that really transformed what it meant, you know, to be hated by, you know, somewhere, but still go out and get the job done for me in my career. It sort of, you know, highlighted the fact that, you know, I'll never forget him saying when they booed louder, it just meant they, not that they didn't like him, but that they respected him because they knew that he was going to be one of the best players. So, yeah, Wally Lewis for me, we're probably a little bit recency biased with what we've seen in the NRL, and we've seen great 5-8s. You know, skill wise, but you know, like I said, if you've got one game for your life and you've got these guys on the side, Wally Lewis was the king.
I think Wally Lewis, along with Brett Kenny as well, mate. I mean, as you mentioned, if you got one game for your life, that game's going to be on the biggest stages, and that's where Wally Lewis did his absolute best work. Obviously, in the Origin arena, for you, is he still the greatest Origin player you've seen?
Joey was pretty good. It's I think that, you know, Cameron Smith. Those guys, again, we're sort of comparing, you know, eras as well. I think that whenever we talk about, you know, best ever, we're looking at a different game right now to what we were watching on the VHS, as I said at the start when we were growing up. So, yeah, I just feel like you have Wally in your side and he just knew how to win the big moments. So, yeah, I think that he's probably the best Origin Queenslander in terms of big moments, but then that's not disrespecting Jonathan Thurston, Cameron Smith, you know, Billy Slater. All those guys have come up with big moments, but you know, had to start somewhere. And you look back at the old tapes, and Wally, when Queensland were up against it, he usually came up trump. So yeah, I think Wally for me is probably the best Queensland player in that era. And then you go on to the modern day ones that have been in the NRL, and sure, those guys are. And Cameron Smith's the greatest of all time in any game. So, yeah, I sort of get your point, but it is hard to compare. I think we start to get into murky waters if we start to compare, you know, Wally's, the style of game that he was playing in versus what Cameron Smith and that were playing in now. But, you know, he certainly won the big moments for Queensland and almost made that rivalry, you know, with Arthur Beetson. And you look back at the old tapes, it was a better game to watch probably than some of the games we've seen this year in the NRL.
Mate, I asked you about if Wally Lewis was the best Origin player you'd seen, and straight away the name that you mentioned alongside him was Andrew Johns. He is, of course, your halfback in this side. Can I ask you, obviously the end of his career and the start of yours, it would have overlapped a little bit. Did you have the opportunity to play against Joey?
Nah, I was filthy because he got injured in 2005 and I made my debut then. And then, you know, I didn't get the chance to play him before he retired, but yeah, Joey was. Everyone always talks about Thurston and Joey, and yeah, I don't think Jonathan Thurston is the player without the influence of Joey before him and what he was able to do. And you know, you talk about the banana kicks, but his vision, you know, that Origin game where he plays and the vision that he comes up with, going back on the inside to Danny Badiris, and
it's one of the best balls of all time, isn't it?
Yeah, and the way that he was able to get his centres involved, and you only have to listen to Joey talk. I've been lucky enough to talk a bit of shop with him, and you know, it's hard because you're trying to listen to what he's saying, but you're sort of in awe that you're talking to him. And you know, he spoke about in Origin when he came in game two, you know, about getting Gaz the ball and where he gets the ball, and he sort of just jumped in for a set and threw Gaz the ball. It was like, you could tell Gaz was a lot happier that Joe was throwing him the ball than me. So, yeah, I just think big moments. You know, like I said, my back line is filled with guys that knew they would do the job and could win the big moments and were probably some of the greatest ever in their position. So I don't think too many people would argue with my back line. We've had so many great halfbacks throughout the NRL in the history, and yeah, I think if you had to narrow it down to two, it'd be between JT and also, Andrew Johns. But, yeah, I'd probably gave the nod to Joey.
Mate, you obviously mentioned that 05 Origin series, and I think people quite often forget the narrative behind that. Game one, Brett Camorley's the halfback. He throws the intercept to Matt Bowen. They drop him. They move Trent Barrett from 6 to 7, and then Trent Barrett gets ruled out on the Sunday, 3 games before that Origin 2, with New South Wales down 1-0, and Joey comes in on the Sunday night. He's got Monday, Tuesday, and then game day, and he puts in two of the most dominant performances in the Origin arena after not playing footy for like 8 weeks. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and that just adds to the aura that was Andrew Johns. And like I said, every time that I've had the chance to sit down and talk to him, it's hard because I'm trying to take in everything that he's saying, or even when he's commentating, but I'm also trying to envision, he's 5, 6, 7 steps ahead of everyone else. So, that performance will go down as one of the best ever because of the circumstances surrounding that.
Mate, let's dive into the engine room. And up front, two champion front rowers, two guys that won comps at the Brisbane Broncos. The first guy, Shane Webke, obviously retired in 2006 with a premiership, won in 2000 as well, a couple of premierships in his career. Mate, was this an easy choice for you?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I think the forwards, like definitely the front row, was probably the easiest part of this. Yeah, this process, picking Shane Webke, he was so good in terms of and who I paired him with as well. He was just able to get the job done. Yeah, a real powerhouse and so good for so long. And I think that, when I picked the side, the backs are sort of, fullback, I sort of had, options and, the wings, I guess there was a few options there, centres, and then you get the 5/8 and halves, and I really went through a process. But probably the front row for me was the easiest. I had Shane Webke go down as, for me, one of the sort of top two or three props ever. And, based off his career, he was always the best in the game and finished that way with a win in 2006.
And, of course, mate, the guy you've paired him with, another guy that I think, a bit like Brett Kenny, he's a little bit underrated because he hasn't really stayed in the public eye of rugby league. Glenn Lazarus, of course, won premierships with the Canberra Raiders, moved to the Broncos, won back-to-back premierships there, and then the Melbourne Storm started this franchise in, rugby league wilderness and decided who's going to be the guy that's going to lead us, and they went for a true winner. And, of course, within 2 years' time, he's lifting another premiership at the Melbourne Storm, 3 premierships at 3 different clubs, including 2 new franchises in the Broncos, well, essentially 3 new franchises, Canberra, Brisbane, and the Melbourne Storm. An incredible career.
Glenn Lazarus, he was just, he's such an intimidating figure. I met him in Origin Camp, and I was just like, wanted to get his autograph and sit down and listen to the stories. But, you need guys that you can build your team around, and, with Shane Webke there on one side and Glenn Lazarus on the other, I don't think you'd have too many problems in being able to go forward, but also not many players would be coming through the middle. So, I looked at those two guys, and, he was so successful in what he was able to do, Glenn Lazarus, in winning competitions and being at the forefront of that. He wasn't just a role player. He was, the leader in those sides. And you can see why everyone, he's underrated, probably because he's not in the media as much. But those people that play with Lazo and have been able to meet him speak so highly of him. So, I think that, you pair him with Shane Webke, and I've almost got the dream team of front rowers.
Mate, was it an easy decision who you handed the 9 jersey to?
I sort of consulted a few people. My stepdad and I have talked about this for years. And I think he made me write my first ever greatest team when I was about 19, 20 when I first started playing first grade. And, he opened up my eyes to a lot of things, and he's been a Danny Badiris fan for a long time. But, I think it's an easy decision for me.
Mate, Cam Smith, obviously his career has been unbelievable, and dare I say, mate, if you were to split his career in half, you could almost pick Cameron Smith as your best hooker ever in either half of his career. It really is incredible.
It is, and yeah, you know, we spoke about Brett Kenny having so much time. Well, you know, there's a guy, Cameron Smith, who's been doing it for longer and more, well, just as successful, based off the fact that he doesn't overplay his hand and he manipulates the defence to give himself time. And yes, he's had some quality players in Billy Slater and also, you know, Cooper Cronk, but if we have a look at, you know, the longevity of how long he's been able to do it for, plus you look at the fact that he did it without those two guys and winning a championship, it is really remarkable. So, yeah, again, I'm looking at a whole body of team here. I'm looking at, you know, when Joey needs the ball, well, you know, Danny Badiris would have been my next choice. And then I think it's, you know, there's daylight between the rest of the field. But, yeah, I look at, you know, Cameron Smith and the way that he can control a game and be able to get Joey the ball and then have Wally on the short side, potentially with Lockie. That for me is, you know, I've got a three-headed snake anywhere on the field who can attack at any time, plus I've got some power in the middle to be able to lay that platform.
Mate, as we dive into your second rowers, you know, the team that you've picked, they would need no help setting a good culture in this team, but these are two guys that I think the highlight of the career is their culture that they set at the clubs they go to. The first one is Sonny Bill Williams. We obviously saw the impact that he had on the Sydney Roosters when he arrived in 2013. You're obviously playing for the Penrith Panthers at the time. I mean, it was incredible what he achieved when he returned there.
Yeah, it was. And, yeah, I remember sitting on a bus coming from Canberra to Sydney to play the Bulldogs in Sydney, and we were excited. You know, there would be a lot of talk about this Sonny Bill Williams guy, and I'd never heard of him before. And, you know, they said, thank goodness he's not playing. And I was like, oh, is he good? And, yeah, the name sounded cool. And then, yeah, you fast forward and having the chance to play against Sonny in the NRL is, you know, what he did for, you know, the culture at the Roosters certainly put them on the path to where they are today as one of the most successful brands in Australian sport and then most successful teams over the last 10 years. So, yeah, for me, yeah, Sonny on one side, his ability to be able to ball play plus run over someone I think was important. And, you know, I'd have him on the side with Wally Lewis. Yeah, that fact that he could give him early ball and come up with plays and then also be able to, you know, skim back through the middle if Wally turned him underneath. For me, that was the appealing fact. But, yeah, if I had to set a culture, I mean, it's one game. I don't know how much culture you get to set. But, yeah, for one game, I think that you look at Sonny and his leg speed and powerful carries out of the back end as well, for me, are really enticing.
And, mate, if you don't look at Sonny Bill, you're definitely going to look at your other back rower, Ben Kennedy. Obviously a champion out of the Newcastle Knights, achieved so much up there. In my opinion, Joey was unbelievable in the 0-1 grand final, but if you were going to give the Clive Churchill to anyone else, it would have to be Ben Kennedy. He was just crazy in that game. And then, of course, a couple of years later, he makes the move to the Manly Seagulls, and he only plays two seasons there. They don't win a premiership in those 2 years, but it kicks off just an unbelievable era for the Manly Seagulls, and I don't think he gets enough credit for it as he should. A guy that was named in the Manly Seagulls' best team of, I think, the last 50 years after playing only, you know, 50-odd games of first grade there, an incredible footballer, BK.
And, yeah, after listening to Joey talk about how much he loved playing with BK and Steve Simpson, and, you know, I had to have Sonny in my side and BK on the other side running lines and being able to protect Joey and, you know, that combination for me, for Newcastle, watching the going to the 2001 grand final, you're right, because, you know, they really tore a successful Parramatta side apart just with their ability to be able to hit lines on an edge and come up with plays. So, yeah, BK and Sonny either side, I've sort of got a bit of flair and foot speed and, you know, someone that can ball play on one side, and then I've got a real tough nut the other side. And I think that's, you know, that's what you need in a side. You need that little bit of mix. You know, you've got the engine room, you've got the front rowers, but then you've got to have someone on an edge that's going to be really tough and uncompromising. I feel like BK did that.
Mate, jersey 13, you're going for a modern-day player, Jason Taumalolo. Have we ever seen a better meters guy in rugby league?
Nah, and, yeah, this one was probably my hardest one. You know, I could have played Brad Fittler there. I could have had Wally there and Cliff Lyons at 5'8". I could have had Bradley Clyde there, who was probably one of the best 13s. But I think when I did this, you know, I was coming off the back of, you know, Jason Taumalolo. He hasn't had the best year this year, to be honest. And last year wasn't great either. But you look at how he played in the 2017 season and, you know, his ability to be able to have footwork through the middle. And, you know, like I said, I'm picturing that if I'm the coach of this team, or not you have the coach, but you'd have Lazo first, and then Webke, and then you'd have Jason Tamalolo, and then you'd probably finish with an outside back, and then you'd be able to kick with Joey or Wally. So, yeah, for me, Jason Tamalolo, I think that he's really transformed what that 13 is. It's maybe going away out of that big style now, and you're seeing more mobile ball-playing 13s. So maybe, you know, transitioning into the front row wouldn't be too far away from Jason. But, I just thought that the way his footwork and power through the middle, I thought that, you know, that had to be in the side as well. And, you know, at times he doesn't get enough credit because he's expected to run for 250 metres every game. He's expected to be the best player on the field. And he doesn't have much help around him at times in that Cowboys side. So if I put him in this side with so many legends and great players, you know, he may run for 600 metres. He's that good.
Mate, I do feel sorry for Tamalolo. I think he sets such a high standard for himself that it can be hard to live up to it week in, week out. And I think people also forget, I mean, he's still a young guy, realistically. It's scary, the player he is at the age he's at.
Yeah, and that's why I thought, you know, maybe he needs to move into the front row and you know, be taking that weight away from having to do so much. You know, if he had his job simplified a little bit and, you know, and that's going to be the hardest thing is telling a guy that we need, because they've tried him on an edge, it doesn't work, he's not mobile enough to be able to defend shape. But if you put him up front and you had a Reece Robson or a smaller 13 that can distribute to the edges, you may be able to see the best out of Jason Tamalolo. But, you know, the game's changing now and he's still only a young man. The 10-year deal was something that we've never seen in rugby league, you know, too much other than him and Cherry Evans. And, yeah, now you're looking at a guy like Payne Haas, who's the same body type in the front row. So, yeah, I think Jason, when those guys set such high standards for themselves with breakout seasons, sometimes it can be hard to live up to when the team that around you is not as good.
I think it's an unreal 13, mate, and there's obviously a couple names that you've mentioned that missed. You obviously mentioned Thurston, Freddie, Bradley Clyde, Danny Medeiros. If you had to pick one guy that was the unluckiest not to make your side, is there a standout for you?
I'd probably say Slater. Yeah, I think that he's, you know, speed. Like I said, I remember my first trip down to Melbourne. I was with the Roosters and we were trying to game plan how to take Billy Slater out of the game. And, you know, we just had a plan that we were going to sacrifice metres on our kick just to roll it into touch to try and so he wouldn't be able to bring the ball back. And, yeah, when you're doing plays like that, and that means you're taking away from what you're trying to do, which is win the game, because you're sacrificing so much to not have someone bring the ball back, then that really, you know, plays in your mind. So I think Billy Slater was probably the most unluckiest for me.
I think, mate, just coming off the back of what you said there as well, I mean, Slater was one of the guys that we had to change the rules of the game for. Obviously, you weren't allowed to kick the ball dead. I mean, I'm sure you probably played a role in that, just quietly.
Yeah, the first game, 2010, after Jared Hayne torched us at Cogger and we bowed out straight sets, they brought in the rule that, I think that year, that you can't kick it dead. You can't kick it dead. I think it was 2011, actually. And, the first game at Parramatta, the old Parramatta Oval, Jared Hayne, we were a bit frightened of him bringing it back 100 metres. So I think I put one of my first kicks was about six rows on the full, dead in the in-goal, just so we could walk down to the 20-metre line. So, that's part of it. You know, the Titans did it down there in Olympic Park and it took the negativity out of the game, so I understand that. Seven tackle rule, but yeah, now we're seeing that sort of rotted what it takes, you know, away from young halves in the game now. They don't kick early anymore because they're scared of seven tackles. They don't kick on the line. They don't kick for their wingers because of the seven tackle rule and escorts and all this stuff. So in a way, at the time, I understood it, but now I think it's transitioned to the game and it's actually rotted a lot of young halves and stifled a lot of young halves in their thinking and kicking and game management and stuff like that, which is why we see a real lack of high quality players in the NRL from 1 to 16 in the teams.
For me, mate, the rule change I'd love to see around this is that it's not a 20-metre restart if it's a kick from inside your red zone from the 20-metre line and beyond. I think that'll be a fantastic rule change.
Yeah, I've been advocating for that for years. I had it inside the 30 because I looked at guys like Brett Camorley and Jonathan Thurston. He used to go down a short side and roll it in the in-goal 30 metres out to get a repeat set. And if you go out and kick from 30 metres out, it's bloody hard to do on the run. I think that with escorts in the 20 and stuff like that, you could have it either way. If it was the 20, it was the 20. But, we just don't see that creative thinking anymore because everyone's scared of seven tackles. And then you pile that on with the six again. If you come up with a bad kick, you might not see the ball for the next 6-7 minutes. But if you just run it into a corner, it's boring. But you're going to see probably a momentum swing or a chance to try and swing the momentum off the basis of that.
So just before I let you go, last thing I want to ask you mentioned Billy Slater. Obviously, for you, there was a 3 or 4 year period there where I think there was no doubt that you had the best kicking game in the NRL and you were so confident in your kicking game. When you were coming up against Slater the week leading up to it, was it more challenging than any other fullback that you've ever played working out your kicking game and trying to hit the ground?
The old rugby league week, it's funny because I never really looked at stats much throughout my career while I was playing. The rugby league week would come out and I'd flick. The only stat I looked at was they used to have a stat called finding the ground or kicks to open ground in the old rugby league week. I don't know if you remember it or not, but I prided myself on being the best in the competition at that, and finding the ground for me was important on so many levels because it gave my chase time to be able to work their way down the field. Plus, it gave us a chance to be able to win field position. And I knew that I was in rhythm if I was finding the ground. So when you come up against Billy Slater, you're preparing for, okay, should we change angles on him? Should we, should you turn me under and I kick back across the ruck? Should I banana it? And then, all those things were going through my head. And then Wayne Bennett comes to the club and says, look, just trust your best. Your first kick is your best because if you change your mind, you're going to get yourself into trouble. So, preparing against Billy was, he's going to catch some on the full. We get that, but we're going to make sure that, we're not going to kick on the play four every single time. We might play to the end. We might, roll one along the ground. We might be able to kick early in a set to try and turn some momentum. And the game was a lot different and you had more chances to do it. But, I found those times that I'd played against him and especially Jonathan Thurston, that they were exciting weeks because you knew that you were playing against the best. And in Origin, we had the chance to try and go up there and get a dub against Billy, and it is hard to try and find the ground, but that was one challenge that I always loved. Was trying to, I think I only beat him once in the NRL the whole time that I played Melbourne. No times down in Melbourne, but you enjoy those challenges.
It's probably once more than most blokes, to be fair though, mate.
I think it was a good night there because we were cooking, so it was good.
Mate, so I really appreciate your time once again. It's a fantastic 1-13. Thank you for your time, mate. I hope everything's going well with the family and kids and whatnot.
Yeah, no worries. Appreciate it. Thanks for that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.